In this episode, we hear from the inspirational Wendy Smith, who's one of our fantastic ambassadors, and she takes us on a journey. She talks about how a motorbike accident changed her life, but how she's overcome these obstacles and how she got involved with the Multi-Schools Council and the work she continues to do now. Hey, Wendy, could you tell us a little bit about your journey that's kind of led you to where you are now?
It's been long and interesting, 48 years worth so far, Kieran, to be precise. So it started, just a little bit of brief background about school. I wasn't really interested in academics because my mum taught me and my sister to read and write before we went to school, and we were very good at maths. Sport was the only thing that interested me at school. So if it didn't involve sport or moving about, I didn't really want to know, to be honest. And my dad, before, I grew up in a pub, but my dad used to be a test driver for a motor company before he had the pub. So I had an interest in cars from an early age. And all I wanted to do was be a car mechanic. That was my whole goal in life. And because dad had taught me so well, I didn't really need any, it was in the days where you didn't really need qualifications for it. You just needed to know what you were doing. Work experience at school, I asked to go to be a car mechanic and literally had to fight them for it because they said, no, you're a girl, you should be in an office. And I thought, that's not happening. So I went and did the work experience. It actually led to me not wanting to be a car mechanic in the end, because it was the experience I had was very male chauvinistic, and I got laughed at a lot. I got told that I'd never be good enough, even though I knew more than most of the mechanics in the industry. Mm. And for a 15-year-old child, going home every day, having had experiences where people would lock me in the boot of cars for a laugh to have a look for water leaks. And it just led to me making a decision after going into that environment that it's not really a space I want to work in. My dad said to me when I decided to quit, he said, you know what, that's not the only thing you're going to be good at, kid. You just need to try other stuff. And so even though I felt really down about not going into the environment I loved, I just went and got a job because I thought, I need money. I want to run my motorbike and go out with my friends. So I went and got a job and just thought, right, I'm just going to try stuff until I find what I like. And I started doing that. And unfortunately, at the age of 17, I had a spinal injury. So I crashed on a friend's motorbike and ended up in hospital for 8 months with the prognosis that I'd never walk again, because I got what they call a spinal cord lesion at T6 and then broke vertebrae above it and below it, amongst many, many other really serious injuries. That sort of put me out of action, Kieran, to be honest. And then when I came out of hospital on crutches, to the disbelief of the medical profession, I didn't know what I was going to do because my whole environment had changed. My body, my brain was still able-bodied, but my body was not. Mm. And it couldn't keep up with what I wanted up here. So, you know, that led to many years of developing my own rehabilitation, mental health problems. So I got really depressed. I got suicidal. You know, I had lots of ups and lots of downs, like big downs as well, because I was a worker. I grew up in a pub, you know, and then all of a sudden everything was taken away and physically I couldn't do literally anything. Then I suppose 10 years after I had my accident, I discovered wheelchair basketball. A friend took me to a training session. I absolutely loved it. I was terrible, absolutely terrible at it. Couldn't shoot. You know, every time I passed the ball, I fell out of the chair. I got hit in the face with basketballs. I got my fingers caught in the wheels. But the thing that hurt the most after that experience was my face. I came home and I had laughed like hysterically for 3 hours. And I just thought, wow, I'm going to go back and I'm going to get good at that. I want to be like them. And within 3 months, I ended up in the Great Britain women's team. Within 18 months, I was at a Paralympic Games, and then basically life just took off. So I always say sport saved my life twice. The first time was when I had my accident, because the doctors reckon it was because I was so physically fit from all the sport I did. That's the only reason my body survived. And then sport saved me again when I hit 28 years old and thought there was nothing left in life for me, and I started playing wheelchair basketball. Mm. It opened up coaching, tutoring. Found I was good at training people. So I've now got a training company. I'm a speaker. I'm an author. So all of these things, even though some people think, you know, oh, 28, that's really old to sort of start again. It was like the beginning of my life again. I get to do lots of amazing different things every day. And my goal in life is just to help people. I like helping anybody get a result. So from something that you might think was quite adverse and not very good, you know, not following the career path I wanted to and being, and then having an accident, which we'd think would finish most people off, you know, now I've got some really great outcomes from it. So it's not all bad.
No, it's not. It is an inspiring story. I mean, when I first met you, I was truly kind of inspired when you explained all that to me. And I think it's great for other young people to hear as well. And we'll come on to some of that as well. But there's a couple of things I want to go back to that you just mentioned. So firstly, because it's really current at the moment, we hear lots about hospitals and people spending time there.
Yep.
You said 8 months. I didn't realise it was that long, actually. What was it like spending 8 months in hospital?
Well, it had two sides to it. So number one, the first part was quite, I'm going to say traumatic for my family,
yeah,
more than me, because obviously I broke the majority of my ribs, my back, I punctured my lung, fractured my skull. I actually laid on the road and had numerous cardiac arrests over 4 days. So I was in, wow, intensive care with a ventilator breathing for me. And my parents had been told, like, everyone needs to be at the hospital because we don't think she's going to survive. So the first 3 days were really touch and go for those guys. I don't know any of this. I was out for the count. The time in intensive care was weird because I had a ventilator and they had me on so many drugs. So I didn't really know what day of the week it was. I could write things, but my writing, like one word, would take up a whole A4 sheet. My sister's got these sheets that she's kept from when I was in hospital with all the stuff I was writing. And it's like, wow. The word "and" took up one whole sheet. It was an interesting experience. And I used to find when I started getting more compos mentis and they were lowering my drugs, getting me ready to come off the ventilator, people would walk in, look at me and cry and walk out. And I would think, what's wrong with these people?
Yeah.
But I couldn't see myself. I didn't realise I had all these wires and, you know, I didn't realise what I looked like. So that was a weird few weeks. Then when I went into the ward, they didn't know what they were doing with me and they nearly made me worse. They had no idea what to do with a spinal injury patient. So within 2 weeks of me going into the main ward, my mum said, enough's enough, she needs to go somewhere.
Yeah.
And it was when they had the ambulance strikes. So of course they wanted to get me transferred to Stoke Mandeville, but there was no ambulances because they had ambulance strikes. So my mum and dad actually hired a private ambulance and took me to Stoke Mandeville. And then when I got to Stoke Mandeville, that was when it all started changing because that hospital is geared up for spinal injuries. So their whole attitude is different. And I spent 3 months laying flat on my back. Because of the nature of my injuries, they couldn't put metal work in. They had to literally let it set naturally. So I literally had what they call bed rest for 3 months, and it was the most boring experience in my life. Some of it was fun as well. My sister would play like Monopoly on my chest and stuff like that. Because if you imagine, I was laying flat down.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if I was winning or losing. She cheats anyway. You know what I mean? She always wins all the money. So there were some funny things that happened. And then when I got out of bed, how I knew I was going to move again, my head had never told me anything different. So every time a doctor said, you know, you're paralyzed, you're going to be in a wheelchair, I'd be thinking, what are you talking about? Because my head was like, you're fine.
Yeah.
Even though I couldn't move, my head was like, telling me I was fine. And I remember just before I was getting out of bed, my sister was playing with my feet because she used to play with my feet and do puppet shows and wind me up. And she was playing with my left foot one day and she said, your big toes just move. And I was like, has it? I was just bored with her playing with my feet.
Yeah.
Has it really? She went, no, seriously, Wendy, look at your foot. So I looked at my foot and she said, tell it to move. And I just thought, I'll humour her, move like that. And it twitched. And it's like, oh, this is an exciting new game. So we spent some time, you know, making my toe twitch. And I just thought, well, the toe moves, it's fine, I'll be all right. Because my attitude was, it's the furthest bit away from the brake site. So if that moves, everything will be fine. And then I got up out of bed into a wheelchair. It was just hard work because obviously the head was going, come on, you can get up and run. But the body obviously
wouldn't let you.
Wouldn't let me. So it was such a weird experience. So then I had another 5 months in hospital doing rehabilitation. And it was good because everybody that was in there was in the same boat as you in a lesser or worse degree.
Okay.
So it made me very aware that actually I was extremely lucky because there were people with full neck breaks that couldn't move anything from the neck down, you know. So the fact that I could move my hands and pick a cup of tea up and hug my family just made me feel very humble and very grateful. You know, we had a very social environment. The nurses were amazing. They really were. So it was like a little cocoon you were in while you were in there. When I left hospital, that's when it became a bit of a shock because the whole hospital was geared up for disability. And when I got home, I lived in a pub. My bedroom was on the second floor and I just wanted to go back to my bedroom.
Yeah.
Which involved four flights of stairs. So you can imagine when I actually got home, it was then a shock for the family. It was like, right, this isn't going to be as easy as it was because obviously we weren't geared up for it.
Yeah, of course, of course. I mean, there's so many interesting elements you've touched on there, Wendy. It sounds like as well it could have even brought you and like your sister even closer. You mentioned your sister a lot there. Are you still close with your sister?
Oh, yeah. I mean, more so. We always have been. She's always had my back. She's a year older than me, so she's always looked after me. We grew up in a pub, so mum and dad had to work 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. So Helen was always, she was always there, you know, on hand whenever I needed her, and she's been there for everything I've gone through. When I went into hospital, we did get a lot closer, and we spend a lot of time with each other now. She runs one of my businesses for me. Yeah, we're very, very close now. Yeah, we have a very close family.
I mean, I've known you for some time now, Wendy, and I know you always try and look for the positive stuff. So I think, you know, sometimes when things are really hard, they can bring like families closer. They can, you know, bring friends closer. So I want to fast forward now to, you mentioned as well, first of all, about the Paralympics. So I believe it was 2004, Athens?
It was Athens, 2004, yes.
Could you tell us a bit about what it was like competing in the Paralympics?
An interesting experience, it really was. Number one, I didn't know what a Paralympic Games was before I got selected for the squad. When the coach, this was the thing, as a child I always thought Olympian. I want to be like Daley Thompson and do everything, you know, be a decathlete and...
Yeah.
So when I had my accident, that all went out the window. And I thought, well, you know, that's that done. I've got to focus on something else. So when the coach, after I think I'd been in the team about 4 months, 5 months, and he said, there's a Paralympic Games coming up in 2004. If everybody trains hard enough, you need to put in some work, you could make it into the team. And I thought, Paralympics, what's that? Google Paralympics. Yeah. It's like, oh, right, that's it. So then I trained like a lot. And I thought, I'm going. That is it, I'm going. So I got selected for the squad. And when he selected me, I actually grabbed him and hugged him. Couldn't believe that I'd got a selection because I'd only been playing sort of, you know, I'd probably only been playing about 8 months when I got selected to go to the Paralympics.
Yeah.
And I just knew there was going to be a lot of work. When we got there, what an amazing experience as well. I mean, getting the kit was good enough. I would have been quite happy with just having the kit bag, to be honest. Because when I got the kit bag and got the shirt out, it's like, oh... It's a feeling that I've never had in my life. I can't really describe it. It's like this massive internal pride, putting your country's kit on. And when we arrive there, you get put on a private bus. You've got security. You're driven with police escorts down to the Olympic Village. And, yeah, it's just an amazing experience to be able to play on that in that type of arena in front of that amount of people, but also meet all the other athletes. Yeah, I was just fascinated by all the other athletes and what they did and their disabilities and how they'd got to where they were. And I spent a lot of my time, not actually with my teammates, but in the Olympic Village, I would go off and I'd think, oh, you look interesting. Who are you? What do you do? And I've got all these photographs of me with all these other athletes. It became like a game in the end. How many photos can I get with other athletes from other countries and find out as much about them? It really opened my eyes up to disability, or rather ability, because there was no disability out there. It was just all ability and talent. Oh, it's just fascinating.
Yeah, I bet. It sounds fascinating even just trying to create a picture of what you're saying. And you've obviously got some great memories from it. We've obviously launched these podcasts because we want to inspire others, and especially through this series as well, we have got a focus on sport. So what advice would you give to maybe young people? They may have a disability, a physical disability, and they really want to get into sport, but they have a lot of self-doubt because they think, you know, my physical disability won't allow me to do it. What advice would you give to those young people?
Number one, there's a sport for everybody. Just go and try them all. There is a sport. I'm not joking. On this planet, there is a sport for every single person.
I agree.
There really is. And if there's not, I'm sure me and Kieran could invent one for you.
Yeah.
But that is That'd number one. That would be interesting. Just go and have a look. Go and try them. Never be afraid to just pick up something new and have a go, because failure and not being good at something is how you get better at something. So I was a terrible basketball player when I started because I didn't use a wheelchair. So I had to learn, you know, I used to crash into walls. The amount of times I've nearly broken things through me just not being good at doing it, but that's how I learn. So, you know, everybody's going to fail. That's how we learn in life. So it's one of those things that just go try things, and there is a sport for everybody. Never compare yourself to another person, because you're a beautiful, unique individual who has their own talents. You know, you've got your own map of reality, your own knowledge, your own skills, your own attitude. You're different to everybody on this planet, and that's the beauty. So what happens is when you compare yourself to someone else, you're always going to fall short because that person's not you. You need to be comparing yourself to yourself on a daily basis. So you only ever look at you. What are you good at? What are your talents? And then you really will find something that you can enjoy and excel at. Even in a team, we have to be the best athletes within ourselves for the team to be the best team. So if I'm always focused on someone else and how I've got a lack compared to someone else, I'm not being the best athlete for my team. I need to focus on me, you know, strengthen up my weaknesses and increase my strengths to be the best Wendy for that team.
It's really clear as well, the people that are listening will be able to see why I wanted you to be an ambassador for the multi-schools, and I was delighted when you accepted. And that's what I want to kind of touch on now. Can you just tell us a little bit about how you got involved with the multi-schools and the work that you've continued to do?
So I'm going to backtrack to when we first met. I came to Marketfield to do a launch for the Be the Best You Can Be program that used to be a schools program. And I had never been to a special school before.
Oh, I didn't realise that.
No. Yeah. And this is where it all started. This is why I'm so passionate, because of what your kids did for me. Mm. And it's not what I did for your kids, it's what they did for me that day when I arrived. So I didn't know what to expect. And I spent the day going around classrooms with children that just astounded me. Some of their level of knowledge, they're not caring about what other people are thinking. So they're just so out of their, they haven't even got a comfort zone, the majority of them. Do you know what I mean? It's just not something that, they've not got all the filters that we have. And it's just amazing to see all this talent. It inspired me with some certain things. I remember one of the children in one of the classes, he told me how to heal my spinal cord injury through neuro reprogramming. I think he was 9 years old and autistic.
Wow.
And the teacher did say to him, I'm sure Wendy hasn't got time to listen to that. And I was like, no, actually, I've got about 5 hours to sit down and listen to you. You just tell me everything I need to know so I can go away and do it. But I was just fascinated. And then they got me playing football. And I said to them, I'm not sure there's any way I'm going to play football. And they were like, don't be silly. We'll hold you up and move your legs for you. And you know, and you're just thinking, I cannot say no to these children. So then I had a game of football. Then we went into the hall to do the talk. And again, they just ask you questions all the way through what you're doing. So there cannot be a set pattern to anything. And it was just, and then I was singing and, you know, it got me so far out of my comfort zone that there's just never been any going back. It was just one of the best experiences in my life. I just cannot describe what they did for me that day.
I remember the football story. That's why I'm laughing about it, because I can remember exactly that. I'm pretty sure I was there.
I'm not sure how this is going to happen. And I'm sure Charlie was involved at that point as well. And it was just like, don't worry, we'll hold you up. And if you can't kick it, we'll swing your leg for you. And it's like, right, fine, where we go. And, you know, and the funny thing was they did, and I did play football. And, you know, and I didn't fall over once. And it was just, I was fully looked after. It was just that comfort zone thing, Kieran. It gave me something in my life that I'd been missing.
Yeah.
And it has enabled me to be a better speaker, to be more humble, to be less judgmental, to just accept everybody for really who they truly are and be open to every human being on this planet.
Yeah.
I mean, that was one of the biggest gifts I've been given in life, spending that day at Marketfield. And then, of course, when you said, would you like to be an ambassador for the Multi-Sports Council? It's like, well, that's a no-brainer. Yes, what can I do?
Yeah.
Because anything to help break down the barriers and the perceptions around disability, because there is no disability. It's just different levels of ability. And the understanding, I have a friend who's autistic and he trades on Forex. And, you know, he's one of the best traders because numbers for him, well, you know, because you work in your environment. You know, he is so analytical with what he does. He's one of the best at what he does. This is why the perceptions, the barriers, we need to break them down and understand that, you know, whether you're on sticks, you're in a chair, you can't talk, you're using sign language, you've got Asperger's, autism, Down syndrome, whatever it is, there's no difference between us as people. We're all unique, we're all individual, and we all have value.
Yeah.
And it's how do you find the value?
Yeah, 100%. And you, quite rightly, you inspired me definitely when I met you to continue what we were doing. It just gave me, seeing your reaction of coming into the school and hearing your experiences and then knowing what we were trying to create, it just, you know, it all linked together so, so well. I'm so pleased that we had that opportunity. I'm a strong believer in kind of things happen for a reason, and the fact that, you know, we signed up to be the best you could be, we got you who came in, because I think if I get it right, it could have been anyone who come in as
we just designated a school. Yeah.
So there was the luck of the draw, and I kind of just want to finish by talking about what you do now, Wendy, because I know you're still very, very involved with kind of education, but education not just for young people, but for adults as well. Can you talk about your work now?
Yeah. So where do we start, Kieran? I'll start with education. So education, I ended up as what they call an intervention specialist in schools. I found I had a talent for helping people, and through the Be the Best You Can Be program, I ended up working individually with children first who had emotional problems, or the ones that were about to be taken out of mainstream school and put into PRU units because of their behavioural issues. Because I always say, you're not your behaviour, you're what you're running on the inside. So let's forget the behaviour and find out what's going on that's driving the behaviour. And through that, I then ended up running some school programmes for a high school I do a lot of work for, which then led into doing more programmes for other schools. Now I've got online, we're putting all of those programmes online. So people will be able to access them as online programmes now. So that's like the education. I'm very involved in getting a change in education. I always mention your school as a model for special schools and for mainstream schools, to be honest, Kieran.
Yeah.
You do some amazing things at Market Field. Everybody should go down there and have a look for the day before they start their own school. So that's that bit. Then for adult education, I'm an NLP trainer. So I train neuro-linguistic programming, but not just that. I train awareness. So I teach people about their human system and how they can get results out of it. And that could be anything from teaching a business person how to structure their day through to teaching an athlete how to create the goal or the outcome they want. And obviously I work deeply in the therapeutic realm. So I work with removing negative emotional blocks that are stored that create these pattern-like loops of behaviour. So anyone who's stuck in like anxiety, is stressed, overwhelmed, all the way through to the deep traumas and PTSD. So I'm like a specialist in that area as well. Then obviously I'm a speaker, as you probably noticed, I'm not speaking. And an author now as well. So I have two books.
Yep.
I've got The Quick Fix Guide to Wheelchair Basketball and a personal development book called 50 Ways to Change.
Which I've read.
Which you have read.
I did enjoy it. It's really, really good. And yeah. I'd encourage people can go on Amazon and buy 50 Ways to Change, can't they?
Yeah. And the nice thing about the book as well, all the money, yes, it does come into me, but it comes into me to then go out again. So what I do with the money from that book, there's two reasons I wrote it. One, I wanted to share all the information and give you a how-to guide of how to change your life without having to have a session with me. And the second one, there's a lot of people who cannot afford to get the mental health care that they need. So every time I have enough money to run sessions through the book payments that come in, I do sessions for free for people who cannot afford the services.
Yeah.
So it's like a give back as well, which is, you know, something I like to do regularly.
I mean, just from my perspective, I mean, it's a very simplistic answer and the book's much more detailed than this. However, for myself, it made me reflect on how much like water and stuff I was drinking in a day. Like there's little things in there like that. There's little snippets and also about the amount of sleep. And it is a really good book just to reflect on yourself and look at, you know, just little changes or little tweaks that you could make. I mean, that's how I took the book.
That basically is. It's just it's a self-development tweaking book. This will take you through the processes of unpicking it all so you understand it. And like you say, you get a choice then to make the little changes that will all add up to those big life changes for you.
Yeah. And I would encourage anyone to go and buy 50 Ways to Change, which is on Amazon. If people want to look up some of the online programs and the NLP stuff you said, Wendy, what's the best way they can do that?
The best way is to go through, if you go and have a look at my website, wendysmith.me.uk, that will give you the basic information about me and you can contact me. We have another company called Inner Edge, and that is where all the schools programs are being uploaded at the moment.
So yeah, there's lots of useful stuff in there. I think the inspiring story at the start, the bit around, you know, believing in the ability, not focusing on the disability, and some of the work you're doing as well now, Wendy. So thank you so much for everything that you continue to do, but for doing this podcast as well.
Oh no, it's my absolute pleasure.
Everyone is different and special in their own way. We should be including everyone, so let's start today.